Hello, everyone. I'm Alan Potcotter, and you're listening to Call Talk for March 27th. Today's topic is getting really good at WFH and hybrid work. If you're listening live, we invite you to be part of the show and ask questions. Here's how you do it. You can email me at calltalk@benchmarkportal.com. I want to remind everyone that all of our shows are archived and available to listen to at any time of the day at benchmarkportal.com. And now with that, I would like to introduce the host of the show, Bruce Belfiore.
Well, welcome back to Call Talk, everyone. You know, I recall when the idea of working from home, or WFH, was really anathema to most companies. Only regional salespeople were given the privilege so that they could visit their customers more easily. And in their case, their dedication to the job and productivity had to be proven on a quarterly basis through their sales figures. Everyone else had to come into the office. We at Benchmark Portal started experimenting with work from home well over a decade ago when two of our employees needed to move from California for family reasons. But they told me they loved working with us and asked if they could work from Maine and Utah, respectively. So this was really, you know, pretty radical for us at the time. And I said yes, and it worked really well. And that led to the virtualization of our company over time, with the last nail in the coffin really dealt by COVID, at which point we became and have remained fully home-based. And it's worked well, but we see many contact center managers still talking to us about how they're working their way through work from home and hybrid workforce management. So we've brought an expert on this topic for you for Call Talk, Michelle Rowan, who's the president of WFH Alliance. So welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Okay, great. Well, for the listeners who may not be familiar with Michelle, let me tell you a little bit about her, because she's the president of Work From Home Alliance and has spent the last 13 years exclusively helping companies design and continuously improve the remote working programs. And through gap analysis of workflows, business processes, et cetera, she helps companies achieve best-in-class work from home and hybrid operating status. So she also facilitates conferences and workshops, bringing together leaders to share insights and experiences. Prior to establishing her own consulting business in 2011, Michelle spent 12 years with Hilton Hotels as Global VP of Reservations and performance management. So it's really good to have you on the show. And one of the things that I loved about our interaction on this ahead of the show, Michelle, was that rather than talk endlessly about the problems of work from home and hybrid, you know, I know that you're focused on solutions, which is really why our listeners listen to this program. So it's perfect. So let's get right into it. You know, how are companies today getting really good at work from home these days? What are the tips that you can offer about focus for leaders can be useful for our listeners?
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for that introduction. And I wanted to start with, like you said, talking about the focus that leaders have right now in terms of work from home and hybrid work. And it's not so much about the logistics of connecting to the network or equipment and services provisioning and that sort of stuff. The focus right now coming out of the pandemic is really on getting very good at something we've used in the contact center environment for a small part of the population for the past decade. Many of us, like you said, Bruce, have been using the work from home model either as a retention strategy or maybe as a staffing strategy for a section of the workforce, but when the pandemic rolled down the track, then everything changed and, you know, everybody was 100% home. So coming out the other side of that, companies now, particularly in the contact center industry, as we know, are taking decisions to keep large populations of people at home because they want it and because it saves companies money. And certainly that is the case in the contact center environment. So the focus now is, again, not so much on the logistics. We figured all of that out completely during the pandemic. Now it's around how do we get really good at supporting people and inspiring them and exciting them and achieving similar results or better results when there's large populations of people that are going to remain distributed as opposed to co-located. And that is presenting kind of a different set of, you know, of optimizations that companies are going through right now. So that's what I'm saying. It's really interesting. The shift is much more now on the soft support as opposed to the technical logistics. Companies have pretty much figured that out, and there are so many solutions out there that will suit every organization one way or the other. It's really the soft stuff, which takes a lot of thinking, a lot of input from the reps themselves, and a lot of rework of workflows and guidelines and policies and even investment in some different technologies. So that's what I'm seeing in terms of the shift in the focus.
Interesting. Okay. There's actually a couple things in there that I wanted to unpack that come to mind. One is the fact that we did surveys to go back from before COVID, and one of the things that we decided to do was to ask people how long they had to commute, right? Then what we did was we took the answers to that question, you know, and basically it was within bands, like 0 to a half hour, half hour to 45 minutes, et cetera, or under half an hour, et cetera. And there was also a category for zero, for people who were working from home, which at the time were the minority of people. And so what was interesting is that the shorter the commute, when we correlated this with, when we crossed it with satisfaction, agent satisfaction, there was a clear correlation between the shorter commutes and higher agent satisfaction. Interesting. And in fact, the people who were most satisfied were the ones who were working from home. So, you know, that was just a very interesting result. At the time, there was probably something to be said for the fact that, generally speaking, the best agents were the ones who were given an opportunity to work from home, right? You kind of had to prove yourself in the office, and then you'd go on. But still, It was striking to us because we hadn't expected it, that these at-home agents ended up also being the happiest, most satisfied. And so that's an interesting thing. And second, when you talk about soft support, one of the things that I think our listeners are all very much into is how they have to instruct and help their and train their agents in soft skills for dealing with customers, right? And in fact, we've just come out with a soft skills course for the, exactly that purpose. What you're talking about is something equally important, which is that the managers themselves have to have good soft skills in managing their agents and their at-home agents in particular. Anyway, I'll toss it back to you.
Okay. Yeah, so let me go back and rewind and start with that first point that you made about your survey results. I'm not surprised by that, that, you know, people, you know, the happiest reps were those that were home-based. I mean, in the contact center environment, and that's what I want to just kind of focus on that for a second because it's different from enterprise or corporate workers to a degree, but in the contact center environment, most of our reps are at the lower end of the pay scale. With that and with the pace of the work, which is pretty insane in the contact center environment, as you know, it's very, very hectic. If you think about it, you probably don't have any other colleagues or coworkers outside of a contact center environment that are handling back-to-back interactions all day long at an occupancy rate of 88 or 90% or whatever the number is these days that companies are targeting on. So between the pace of the work and the compensation level, working from home is very, very appealing for our primary demographics in the contact center environment. Our employees are not interested in commuting. They're not interested in buying office clothes. They're not interested in paying incremental costs for shoulder child care or other family care costs. They're not interested in buying lunch outside of home 4 days a week or 5 days a week. So we have an advantage in the contact center environment to where we haven't been in that recent battle of, for the most part, you know, how many days a week do people need to be in the office? Because there are large populations of contact center organizations that are keeping people home full time. They're offering full and part-time home-based positions. And I think as more and more leases come up for renewal or disbandment, we're going to see even more of that, because in the contact center environment, it was demonstrated quite clearly that the technology works. We have clear visibility of production and output, and our people want to work that way for the most part. So I wanted to start there. So I'm really not surprised by your survey results. And I think if you survey again, you're going to see the same thing. It's just that the average distance to work is going to be much higher now because so many people are working from home as opposed to working in office. The best thing to be able to do to be able to hire and attract the largest talent pools that are most capable and qualified in the contact center environment is to offer options. So if you can offer, fully in-office positions for people that want that, that's terrific. It's probably a small percentage in the contact center industry, but there are people, some that would prefer to work full-time in office. Offering hybrid, great option for many. Offering fully home-based is the most popular option, and again, growing. But giving people choice so that they can make adjustments in their lives as needed is the best way to attract and retain the most qualified talent pool. So I think that's something to keep in mind. Even if we don't have fixed office space in a market, we can certainly procure some office space through Radius or some of the other pop-up offices if that's something that employees are interested in certain markets where you're hiring. So, So the second comment you made was really interesting around soft support, because it is a big thing. And if you are reading much lately, you'll see that leadership development for remote and hybrid team members is lacking. On the enterprise and corporate side of the world and in the contact center space as well, there's a need for it. We can't just assume that our managers and leaders that were great at leading co-located teams are going to be effective when people are distributed, because it's different. You know, it's different tools. It's different skill sets. So there definitely needs to be leader development programs in place when you're managing large populations of people at home. Otherwise, you're just taking a big chance with people that you don't need to take, for people that aren't really prepared.
Yeah, no, very good points. And if we could dive a little bit more into what those different tools and skill sets are, because one of the things that occurs to me is that even back in the day, when people would allow people to work from home, there was always a concern, will people have the self-discipline to do it, right, to do it right? And so it's one thing to be a contact center manager or supervisor in the office with the team, and you're basically right in the milieu. You don't have to sort of proactively do certain things because they come to you. When it's a virtual environment, it's different. So what are those things in terms of tools, skill sets, personality traits, et cetera, that you can think of that could help our listeners both evaluate themselves and the people that work with them or for them to optimize success in this kind of environment?
Okay. Well, and we're not talking about reps here because we have very clear visibility of what our frontline people are doing. It doesn't matter where they sit. We've got center views and aspect and all those other tools. So, people are viewed as ports, and it doesn't matter if they're all co-located in the same location or distributed across the United States. We're going to see their production and output the same way. So your question is really around how do we know that our supervisors are as productive and effective as they were when we were co-located. Yeah.
No, thank you for that, that clarification. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So number one, how do you know your supervisors are as productive? Usually there are requirements for supervisors in terms of primary job responsibilities, you know, one-to-one coaching sessions, team meetings. There's a fair amount of admin work, and there's some primary responsibilities that all of our frontline supervisors have. So it's pretty easy to monitor their output in terms of just the volume of work that they're completing, because there's goals, right? There's goalposts and guidelines around a certain number of one-on-one sessions that have to be done in a week, and meetings that have to be run in a week, and huddles and other sorts of communications, probably some contests and promotions. It's pretty easy to monitor all that stuff and look at production and output using standard project management tools or workday tools that people keep track of their production and output on a daily basis. They might not be used to doing it, but it's a good habit to do it. Now, in terms of effectiveness, that's another big question mark, because I will say this. If you have just an average team leader or manager in an office environment that is not really that effective in inspiring and driving performance of team members, if they're not very good at doing it in an office environment when people are co-located, in other words, they're kind of slouchy or they don't follow through and their team members are kind of working around them instead of looking to them for advancement and for professional growth, that problem's going to get worse in a distributed environment. So again, mediocre frontline managers and supervisors for the most part in a co-located environment are going to be worse in a distributed environment, unless you've just got some people that, were completely introverted in an office environment and flourish at home. Mm-hmm. That's possible. But for the most part, if you've got people that have trouble staying on track, have trouble meeting goals and deadlines, have trouble inspiring others by running great meetings whether they're one-on-one or team meetings, those people are going to struggle even more in a remote environment, and it's going to show up in a couple different ways. You're going to see it in employee satisfaction of their team members, but you have to measure it frequently. And two, you're going to see it in retention or turnover. You'll see those trends. So I recommend to clients and colleagues of mine that they use pulse checks. Pulse checks are 3 to 4 questions every month to measure engagement and satisfaction of team members. And questions vary every single month based on what's going on in the business environment. So questions like, how was your training course that you completed this month? What are your customers saying about the new product rollout? How was your meeting with your supervisor this month? Do you have the tools that you need to do your job well? So rotating questions like that just a couple of a month will help you identify very quickly if things are going off the rails, if there are trends that are heading in the wrong directions with leaders. So again, the best practice is to start with leader development and training so they clearly understand what's expected and the tools that they'll be utilizing to deliver against those expectations, how they're going to be held accountable, and then use a measurement that's frequent, like every month. Waiting for the 6 months, engagement survey. It's too late. The train's already left the station. I mean, I love big employee satisfaction surveys that are annual or biannual, but we can't wait for that to understand the effectiveness of our team leader support.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It makes sense. And, what are the top three priorities that you're seeing for companies to really move the needle in terms of deployment and support? You're getting really good at this because you've got a lot of really good points there. And so if people have to sort of think of prioritization, et cetera, what would you put in the top three?
Yeah. And there are, these may vary slightly by company, but again, depending on the starting point of organizations and, kind of where they were going into this and how mature their work from home model was before the pandemic, and how much they're willing to have invested in it in the last 2 years and how much they're willing to invest in it. But this is what I see as the priorities. And again, these are colleagues and clients of mine, members of Work From Home Alliance. This is what they're focused on. First is reengineering the onboarding and orientation process, because it used to be that onboarding and orientation in the contact center environment was kind of an all-in-one thing. It was day one and day two of new hire training were reserved for onboarding and orientation. That's where we would crank out the new hire paperwork and the benefits administration and the education would be done and meeting senior team members and, how to get paid and how schedules work and those kinds of things. They were all handled on day one of orientation, actually, and then new hire training would start day two or day three. And now I'm seeing companies separate those activities. So onboarding begins now, the day the job offer is accepted. So when the company representative is on a live video, and it usually is an in-person live interaction when we make a job offer to someone and they accept it, that's when the onboarding process starts. I'm seeing companies take advantage of that face-to-face interaction, even though it may be on video, it's face-to-face, that they're having to start the wheels in motion about next steps in the process, and to start to get people excited about the decision that they've taken to join the organization, because there's usually a period of 7 days, 10 days, 2 weeks, hopefully not longer than 2 weeks, before someone actually starts in live orientation. So between that, the day of the job offer and the start of that live orientation, we need to fill that gap with really meaningful activities and learning for employees. And top of the list should be getting people excited and building the momentum about the decision that they've taken. Because let's be about their new job opportunity, because people are still, other companies, competitors are still knocking on that new hire's door and making job offers, right? That doesn't necessarily turn off when they accept your position. They still are getting responses and feedback from other organizations. And we don't want people second-guessing the decision that they made. We want people ignoring the knocks on the door that they're hearing, because they're so focused and building momentum and excitement about the decision they've taken to join your company. So I'm seeing companies get really creative about the activities in that first week or 10-day period. They're just shifting some of that paid time in day one orientation to several hours of pay time for this other stuff. So benefits may be covered by pushing a video of an employee who's talking about benefits and how to enroll out to that new hire. It's a video. It's a YouTube video, in other words, instead of a 10-page document about how to sign up for benefits. I'm seeing companies push videos, of an employee who's talking about scheduling and schedule choices and how the schedule process works in the organization, and that's being pushed out to new hires. I'm seeing companies record and push out videos on payroll, and something that's a pretty sterile directive usually, and now it's become much more interesting because there's somebody that looks like the person you just hired that's talking to them in the form of a video, telling them about how all that stuff works. And I'm seeing companies even use games and contests and promotions during this onboarding period to get people excited about the decision they've made to come to work for your organization. So that's a big shift, and that takes some thinking to kind of get that right. But it's filling that gap and really separating onboarding from orientation and new hire training. And I'm seeing the second thing is high-impact new hire training. So training is being completely re-engineered because the days of piling people into a classroom and talking at them for 8 hours and using some CBT, some computer-based training, is really, that's gone now. Now new hire learning is generally remote, so there's very few organizations that are asking people to come into the office for new hire training. At least some of it, if not all of it, is remote. So people are taking training from their home, and generally it's a mix of self-directed new hire learning and live virtual classroom, and also live buddying and role-playing with others, you know, breaking out into small meeting rooms and doing that. I'm seeing gamification being used, again, in new hire training, working in pods, skills-based learning where people are learning one or two skills and then they go away and get good at them and then they come back and learn another third and fourth skill on top of it. So I'm seeing a lot of work being done in new hire training. There's, you know, all that content, and it's, you know, really time to redesign it, not only because the learning environment has changed, but also customer preferences and priorities have changed. So what was important to your customers 3 years ago is probably not the same as it is today. So it's a great time to review and refresh content entirely. And then the third priority I'm seeing companies work on, management teams work on, is team building and skills building throughout the, you know, entire employee life cycle. Again, adding gamification. I'm seeing that start at the time of job offer acceptance. You know, 80% of people that work in a contact center environment play games outside of work. If you look at the different demographics, they're playing board games, they're playing digital games, virtual reality, but it's a large population of people that use games in their lives. So why would we not use them in the business world? People are accustomed to learning that way and navigating that way. Again, it's the automation of contests and promotions, taking that, you know, admin, that arduous admin time out of the role of the supervisor. And if we're using gamification, it's a click of a button, the playing field is level, each supervisor is as good as the other because all they're having to do is push a button to launch a contest and a promotion and then follow up on it and applaud you know, those that get recognized. Running great meetings is another thing I'm seeing companies work on. I mean, that just doesn't happen on its own. That takes practice, and it takes the right tools, and it takes the right content, and all that stuff, and the right people. I mean, I'm seeing companies use reps and leaders to deliver content during team meetings. It's not just leaders talking at people for 30 minutes. It's reps sharing content, reps that are interested in developing their skills, who are good at, you know, who have decent platform skills, and it's much more effective to have different speakers in meetings, as we know. I'm seeing companies live stream social events. They're live streaming cooking classes for teams of people. This is stuff that never happened in the bricks and mortar environment. So not only is it are we getting good at managing, distributing teams? People are learning more about their team members and becoming more tightly knit now that they're remote than they ever were in office. I'm hearing that again and again from my clients. It's super interesting. And then, of course, there's professional development, too. And in a remote environment, we got to make sure that happens at all levels. That takes some work.
Wow, boy, that was an amazing listing there. I was taking notes, Michelle, as you were talking. There's just so much in there. Interesting thing about the cooking classes, too. I think about the fact that people in the past would say, that food was what kept contact centers together and people coming to the contact center. But in this case, you're making it at your own home. But and sort of sharing, and it's really you're sharing the process and not just the result. And
that's right.
Yeah, that's something that really builds a lot of camaraderie as well.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that I'm involved in Boy Scouts, I'm involved in Rotary, I have friends who are involved in Toastmasters. And a lot of the principles that you're talking about, which have to do with good communication and bonding and all that kind of thing, and being trained in how to do it well, is really key and something that, if you think about it, has not been used that often in the contact center industry. And one of the things that I've always said is that, for instance, supervisors are so important. And unfortunately, in so many cases, people are just promoted to the supervisor level because they're good agents and they're not trained in what they need to do to be really good supervisors. And you're taking that to another level. You're saying, it's not just the supervisors who need to be trained. It's everybody who needs to be trained in, how to work together and how to,
And it's really, if you think about it, it's really stuff we should have been doing a long time ago. The pandemic has prompted us now that so many people prefer to work in a distributed environment, it's mandating that we get good at this stuff. But we should have gotten good at it a long time ago anyway, because it'll make us much better workers and much better leaders.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we've come to the end of our half hour here. Is there anything that you'd like to add, Michelle, before we sign off? Then just one golden nugget after another that you've offered us. We really appreciate that. But are there any final words of wisdom you'd like to leave with us?
The only thing I'd like to leave with your listeners is to, offer people choice and look for ways to be flexible. That's what people want in the contact center environment. We see the uprise of the gig economy and gig workers, and people aren't going to work for contractors and BPOs and gig organizations because they think that's a better place to hang their hat necessarily. They're going to work there because they're really flexible environments, particularly in scheduling flexibility and, status. Even I don't want to say attendance because that's not a last minute decision, but various flexible scheduling models. So I just encourage everybody to look for flexibility features in your environments. It's very compelling.
Okay. Well, thank you very much again.
Thank
a lot
you.
Of I really appreciated it. Really enjoyed this very much, Michelle. So thank you. And with that, we will hand things over to Alan to wrap things up.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you, Michelle, for your insightful discussion on today's show. Be sure to join us next month for another great show or look at a huge selection of archive shows on hot topics at benchmarkportal.com. Then click on Call Talk, where you'll find over 15 seasons of this show. From all of us at Benchmark Portal, keep those headsets steady and your fingers ready. This is Alan Pockhotter signing out. Have a great day.